Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Took a lot of grit. Took a lot of preparation, a lot of hard work. It just took every pitch, every single pitch. We tried to win every single pitch, and I think we won more of them than we didn't. Credit to them. They were a fantastic opponent. It was just a pleasure to play them, and what an unbelievable game.
That was Gerrit Cole, and Gerrit Cole might be in the most dominant stretch we've ever seen from a Houston athlete. Hasn't lost a game since May 23rd. Has gotten better and better as the season has gone on. Had a performance earlier in the Yankee series, Game 3, I believe it was, where he pitched 7 shutout innings, and we were like, boy, what was wrong with Gerrit Cole? He walked 5 guys. Like, he was, that's how good he's been, is that he pitched 7 shutout innings, and we're like, boy, he felt a little bit off today. Like, that's how good he's been. That said, Seth, as dominant as he's been, I didn't want anything to do with a Game 7. Where Gerrit Cole is out there. Not because of Gerrit Cole or anything. I just, at that point, the Yankees will theoretically would have seized momentum. And now you're in a series where they're able to sort of empty the chamber with the bullpen. Granted, the bullpen would have been very taxed from having to have a bullpen game. But game sevens are weird, man. And weird things can happen. Weird bounces can happen. Jose Altuve, by hitting that home run, not only won that series for the Astros, I think you could argue that he might have won game one for the World Series for them too, because the residual effect of Gerrit Cole not having to pitch game 7 of the ALCS is that he does get to pitch game 1. You do get to set up your pitching the way you want to for the World Series, which was a big advantage for the Nationals potentially, given the fact that they swept the St. Louis Cardinals.
Yeah. No, and Gerrit Cole going out there in game 7 could pitch brilliantly. And as the Astros had demonstrated twice in that series, if Gerrit Cole and the relievers had given up 2 runs, that might not have been enough. It's right. Just you understood and you respect exactly what it is. I was a little bit ashamed of myself for how nervous I started getting Saturday afternoon, just because it really hits you at that moment when you're facing a really good team in the playoffs, how delicate and precarious your situation is. Mm-hmm. No matter how much better you might be overall as a team or whatnot, it comes down to those last 2 games. And sometimes your bats just aren't alive, and sometimes the other team just gets here. Sometimes Verlander goes out and has a rough first inning. Likewise, you could very easily see Cole go out and have a rough first inning in a low-scoring game. Yes, that was very nerve-wracking.
This is almost this challenge in the World Series is almost the flip. It's almost the opposite of the challenge that the Yankees pose to the Astros, right? The challenge the Yankees pose is built around the fact that they've got professional hitters 1 through 9 in the lineup. They're 7 through 9, and that was potentially would have been a big difference in game 6 if the Yankees were able to win that game. There were no empty spots in their lineup 1 through 9. Their 7 through 9 hitters, granted through the early part of the series didn't hit that well, but they were just more dangerous hitters in this series than what ultimately wound up being Yordan, the catcher spot, and Josh Reddick.
Mm-hmm.
They're 7 through 9. They scared you from 1 through 9 in that lineup, and the depth of their pitching staff, the bullpen, scared you. You weren't really that scared about their starting pitching. This is almost the opposite. The strength of the Washington Nationals is the fact that they can throw 4 starters at you that certainly can lock down a lineup that's been hitting the way the Astros lineup has been hitting throughout this postseason. Their OPS isn't even 700 as a team this postseason, or at least in the Yankees series it wasn't. So this is what fascinates me about this series. Completely different type of challenge. And this, what you're getting, especially in games 1 and 2, you're getting some like WrestleMania main event style pitching matchups to open this series. I think if I were one of the powers that be in baseball, I'm feeling okay about this World Series matchup from a marquee standpoint. You're getting Cole and Scherzer in game 1, Verlander and Strasburg in game 2. Those are cool pitching matchups. And by the way, maybe you don't get 4.5, 5 hour games with these pitching matchups. Maybe the young kids can stay up and watch the whole game.
Maybe you don't get 4.5, 5. Oh, because you're actually leaving guys in to.
These are good pitchers who might pitch 7 or 8 innings.
Well, or just the fact that you're going to leave them in under like the Nationals or the Yankees, where you might potentially be just having all these pitching changes all the time.
That too.
You're actually going to leave guys in. It makes me nervous because now you look at the Nationals. And what looked like on paper, hey, you were thinking these 1-2-3 matchups will be awesome. I think the Nationals probably feel a lot more confident about their 1-2-3 than Astros do about their 1-2-3 now that Greinke is working through whatever he's working through. Not to mention, the Nationals also have Anibal Sanchez, who almost pitched a no-hitter in the playoffs.
Versus bullpen game for the Astros in this series.
Right. So they have 4 starters. Yeah. And a bullpen that's, I think, has been better in the playoffs than people anticipated and expected. You look at the bullpen rankings headed into the playoffs. Most of them you saw the Astros would be 4th or 5th, whereas the Nationals were 10th. And I don't think that bullpen has performed like that with the Nationals. They've been better.
Are you surprised the Astros are as big a favorite as they are? They're the biggest betting favorite in a World Series since the Red Sox in 2007. When the Red Sox, I believe, swept the Colorado Rockies that year. So they deserve to be a big favorite that year. The Astros are a -235 favorite, which means you have to risk $235 just to win $100. The Nationals are a +195 underdog, which means if you risk $100, you almost double your money. You win $195. So obviously I'm rooting for the Astros. I'm just not going to bet on the World Series because I don't think the Astros deserve to be as big a favorite as they are. If I were to bet, if someone said, here's $100, you got to bet it on the World Series, I'd probably throw it on the Nationals. That's a pretty live dog. To double your money at 2-1 with Scherzer, Strasburg, and Corbin?
Especially if you consider the Nationals when they're at their low point this season, where they started out
19-31.
19-31.
Through their first 50 games, yeah.
So 13 games below, what, 19, 20?
12 games.
12 games below 500. Yeah. Since that point, they've matched the Astros record, I think within one game. Mm-hmm. They're about equal teams. And having watched the Astros in that Rays series and now seeing through the Yankees series, but especially the Rays with their pitching and how dominant the Rays pitching is, I'm surprised that the Astros are as much a favorite as they are. And I guess, you go into a 7-game series and usually it starts to compound with these things and the lineup's gonna take hold. It's just that there's no way I look at that. There's no way I look at those odds, those gambling odds, and think, oh, yeah, there's gonna be a cakewalk. Not after what I've just seen with both these last two series.
No, you get a feeling with this Astros lineup in that Yankees series, Seth, that you didn't have all year. And whereas all year you were like, oh, someone's gonna hit here, 1-9. The same feeling I just described having with the Yankee lineup in that series is how you felt about the Astros for most of the season.
Yeah.
That 1-9, boy, this is a really dangerous lineup. The way it was in that series with the Yankees, man, like, I trust Springer because he's Springer, but he wasn't hitting. Like, the only real chunk of the lineup where if I'm a Yankee fan, I feel like, man, if I get through 2-5, then I feel pretty good about our chances of working our way through this. And even though Correa had some big hits, the Astros didn't have a string of hitters where you felt like they were going to put together a rally in that series.
Look, they didn't have a single guy in that series other than Altuve over 800 OPS.
Yeah.
It happens to various individuals in a playoff series versus a really good team. But Altuve was the only one with an impressive batting performance for the series. Which brings me back to your question that you had Friday, which was, who would you predict is going to be the ALCS MVP?
Neither of us picked Altuve.
Yeah.
I picked Verlander, and you picked Correa, if I'm not mistaken.
Did I? I forecast more greatness for Correa.
Yeah. Altuve wound up winning it. Deservedly so.
Yeah.
By the way, Altuve...
Is there anybody arguing? Is there a case for anybody else?
No.
No. If Cole had ended up pitching Game 6... okay.
Or if there were a Game 7 and Cole pitched it.
What if Cole had pitched a great game in Game 6 and it ended up being the exact same circumstance at the end? Let's say score is a little bit different. Let's say the score is tied at 2 or something, but Cole had pitched a great game, but then Altuve has the walk-off.
Altuve's the MVP. Altuve's the MVP. However,
what if Cole pitches a no-hitter through 7 innings?
And Altuve hits
short
that home
rest,
run?
And then Altuve hits the home run.
Altuve's the MVP.
Okay.
Yeah, because of the series. Moment. All right. Let's do headlines. We have not talked much, Seth, about other things going on around the NFL outside of the Texans losing to the Colts. In the division yesterday, Both the teams behind the Texans and the Colts in the standings wound up winning football games yesterday. The Jacksonville Jaguars went into Cincinnati and did what every team that goes into Cincinnati does. They beat the Bengals 27-17. And then I don't know if you saw the end of this Chargers-Titans game where the Chargers had a goal-to-go situation and seemingly got the ball into the end zone multiple times, but had one called back by a penalty. And then ultimately Melvin Gordon looked like he scored a touchdown. They reviewed it. It was a fumble. The Titans recover the football. The Titans hold on to beat the Los Angeles Chargers 23-20 in just a classic Charger game where they found a way to lose a game and fall to 2-5 on the season.
There's something at this point where I think the Chargers definitely have, if you believe in the concept of karma, either Philip Rivers or the Spanos family or somebody must be the actual devil or something. Oh, how does all this bad luck routinely happen to the Chargers over and over again in different facets? Yeah. Sometimes it's injuries. Sometimes it's weird turnovers.
Someone has a secret life with the Chargers that we need to find out about.
Yeah,
it's probably Philip Rivers.
You think so?
He's very religious outwardly.
Yeah.
I think there's some stuff going on.
If I had to write a movie and make one of them, the Spanos family would be the likely culprits, and then the twist at the end is, oh no, it was Rivers all along.
Philip Rivers, yeah. Yeah. Because that is a cursed football team right now. Ryan Tannehill, by the way, over 300 yards in his first start as Tennessee Titans quarterback, Seth.
The future.
Pick him up in fantasy.
Gosh, I hope they give him an 8-year extension.
Whoever. Just one of them. Mariota or Tannehill.
Well, it's
either
not going to be Mariota.
Either one.
It's 100% not going to be.
That's true. Meanwhile, the Rams finally win a football game. They lost 3 in a row. They beat the Atlanta Falcons, which, like beating the Bengals, not a very difficult thing to do these days. They destroy them, though. They just blew the doors off of the Atlanta Falcons in Atlanta yesterday, 37-10. Seth, two stories coming out of this game. One, I would imagine that Dan Quinn is probably calling up realtors and packing his things at this point. There's no way he survives this. He'll get fired as Atlanta's head coach. Meanwhile, Jalen Ramsey's first game with the Rams. Amazing recuperative powers for Jalen Ramsey to recover from this back injury.
His back's okay. He did allow 69 yards receiving by Julio Jones. They sent him out there in limited action, put him on Julio Jones, and it was you never know what coverages they're playing. I hate looking at a box score and saying, "Well, Jalen Ramsey led all that. He might have been in a soft zone." So this is another one of those games that makes me feel like, okay, boy, the Texans and what they did versus the Falcons a couple weeks ago, am I still reading way too much into that, given that the Rams have looked awful lately and this is their get right game?
The Chargers win too.
The Falcons are the get right team.
Monday after the Chargers game, we're like, best win of the O'Brien era. Yeah, they're 2-5.
If you were going to euthanize one of two people on the Falcons, who do you think would be a more merciful death? Would it be Matt Ryan or Dan Quinn?
Dan Quinn.
You think so? I feel worse for Matt Ryan. Of course, he has the prospect of another coach coming in.
Yeah, and we've seen when a decent offensive coach comes in, he won an MVP.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So but I feel like he deserves our mercy, though. You know, he deserves to be put out of his misery.
I gotcha.
Or as Dan Quinn, I'd rather see him suffer.
Wow, that is harsh. Yeah. That is a vindictive side of Seth Payne that I think we all knew existed. But, boy, to have it unload on Dan Quinn, of all people. The NBA is going to crack down on unruly fan behavior. Fan behavior has been a big talking point on the show today with talking about Yankee fan. But the NBA is enacting a zero-tolerance rule for abusive and hate fan behavior. Seth, as we know, we've seen it. The difference, I think, with the NBA stuff and the Yankee stuff is the Yankee stuff has been largely fan-on-fan violence. In the NBA, there have been incidents, isolated incidents, of players being subjected to taunts from fans, probably most infamously in, I think it was in Utah, where Russell Westbrook was subjected to some racial taunts there. So the NBA is cracking down with a zero-tolerance policy for abuse, or for fans verbally abusing players or anybody, a zero tolerance policy for fan conduct, which begs the question, how long would the average Yankee fan last in an NBA game?
What is the,
I say 16 minutes.
Oh, Yankees fan, actually, yeah. And I guess what is the actual, so the zero tolerance is what, you're not allowed to say anything to a player?
Can
a fan say, hey, you suck?
I don't want
players protected from, hey, you
denigrating
suck.
Denigrating language.
Oh, that's pretty denigrating, yeah. Is it not? So what's their definition for denigrating?
Sexist language, LGBTQ language, any denigrating language in that way, anything that is non-basketball related, they said.
Okay.
I think you suck is basketball related.
I guess so. Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess you never really think about that insult and really what it might actually mean. It's kind of taken on its own. Oh, it's just an insult.
Yeah.
And then you realize, like, oh, wait a second. That let's break that down. I'd like to see that court case. I'd like to see that get challenged. Like, what exactly did you mean by you
just
suck?
Just a huge court case on the word suck.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Mm. That would be something for court TV. By the way, I looked, their three best seasons, Jeter and Altuve. This is not solving anything. Jeter's OPS, 918. Altuve's, 898. Altuve's batting average, 332. Jeter's batting average, 337. Altuve has more home runs, more stolen bases. Jeter, a higher OPS. These guys are basically identical through this chunk of Altuve's career so far.
The same players.
Which means Altuve should be a first ballot Hall of Famer someday.
Except that Altuve would definitely change his position if a superior fielder showed up. I don't know what position that would be or where they'd move him. But
Altuve would give you the shirt off his back.
Unlike Jeter, who refused to go to third base,
yep.
Altuve would do whatever is best for the
team.
Right,
and that bastion of unselfishness, A-Rod, decided to... he said, I'll play third base.
Yeah, you know, Altuve got up to the podium and talked about how it wasn't about his home run. It was about George
Springer. All the other home runs?
All these other guys, yeah. No, Jeter would have gotten up there and said, yeah, it's all about me, baby.
It's all about me. Do you guys see that swing? Beautiful swing.
You remember the time I jumped into the stands? Yeah.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.